Get your priorities right. That was the recent message from the Secretary of State, Julian Smith. He said Stormont needs to reform.
The Executive, though, needs to take a different approach than it has historically. It needs to reform. We're setting up a board, as I said. We're looking at how we encourage greater productivity. I was slightly disappointed to hear this week that rates have been ruled out, water rates have been ruled out. The Executive needs to look at its own revenue-raising measures, as well as coming to the UK Exchequer for cash.
So are our politicians now starting to take notice? Late last week, the First Minister, Arlene Foster, hinted that tuition fees may be one area where they may make changes in order to raise that extra cash. Here's what the First Minister said on Inside Politics with Mark Devenport.
I do think we need to have a look, for example, at maybe universities, how they are funded. Do we need to revisit that whole issue again? And so there are
higher tuition fees.
Yeah, well, can we have that debate in a positive way? Do we need to look at other issues as well? I think we should have those debates. Doesn't mean that we decide very quickly one way or the other, but we always need to have the debates to find out what's the best way forward.
Yes, and speaking on Sunday Politics, Michelle O'Neill said, no way.
I think we need to look at how we do fund our universities. We have to be about building a knowledge economy. We have to work with universities about how they can be creative and innovative about attracting new funding streams. Those things will help grow our economy. Those things help make education more affordable. That should be something that the new executive does look at. But raising tuition fees is not the way to go.
So, do we in Northern Ireland have to face the fact that changes have to be made, and they may be painful changes for some, to make us more financially stable? And where would you make those changes? Would you raise that cash through a change in tuition fees, the water rates, income taxes for people that earn more? 03030 80 55 55 on the phones, 81771 on the text this morning. Your standard rates apply. Let's speak to Robert Murtagh, I think it is, the president of the NUSUSI. Did I get that right, Robert?
Yeah, you got it right, yeah.
Good. Your reaction, first of all, to the First Minister's comments last week?
Yeah, so this debate has already been had. We know the answer is not to face additional financial burdens onto students. We need to be knocking down barriers to accessing education rather than putting them up. We have a serious brain drain already in Northern Ireland. Too many of our young people already decide to seek employment or education across the water or across the world. We need to be trying to keep and incentivising those young people to stay here so that we can grow our economy. You know, we heard that the Secretary of State talk about greater productivity. Part of the new day or new decade, new approach agreement was around long-term financial planning. One of the best ways in which we can future-proof Northern Ireland is to invest in education so that all of our young people are able to get the education that they have a right to.
And of course, just to put this in more context, university fees in Northern Ireland can be up to just over $4,275 a year, while in England they can be up to $9,250. So you know the point I'm going to make, Robert. There's a huge difference there already. People across the water might say, well, why should we subsidise Northern Ireland to have cheaper university places whenever we don't get them over here? So what do you say to them?
Well, I mean, if you look at Scotland doesn't charge tuition fee at all, and Scotland actually relies less on public funding for its higher education sector than we do in Northern Ireland. So, you know, I don't think this is about, you know, trying to pit students in Northern Ireland or England and Wales against each other. My colleagues in the National Union of Students in England and Wales have been advocating for getting rid of tuition fees for a long time and have been opposed to tuition fees in England and Wales. And we can see that it's just not a sustainable way, because a lot of students, you know, we know that some students don't end up paying back the loan. And so the government ends up subsidising the loan anyway. So the system itself is just completely flawed. And it just isn't, it's not a sustainable way to fund higher education. And especially if we want to look at future economic growth in Northern Ireland, we need to be incentivising our young people to stay here. You know, if young people go across the water, there does tend to be more employment opportunities. There does tend to be a better standard of living. We need to be keeping our young people here and actually developing our own economy.
Okay.
And creating a higher standard of living here, and investment in education has to be part of that.
Robert, just set out for us your understanding of the stats as they stand. Are people still going across to England a lot for university and then therefore staying over to work there, live there, even with those differences in the fees?
Yes, absolutely. And part of the cause of that is the cap that we have on students, home students going to university in Northern Ireland. I don't have the stats kind of offhand as to how many students still decide to go, but we know that there is a huge problem with that, even anecdotally. And, you know, we know places like Liverpool, you know, London would attract thousands of students from Northern Ireland every year. And we, as I say, we need to be trying to keep those young people here.
0-30-30-80-55-55. Stay there if you can for a moment, Robert. Mickey's on the line. Good morning to you, Mickey.
Morning, Finney.
What do you think?
I was on this show 2 weeks ago and I said to you, he's going to put down a certain amount of money and then tell the rest of them, make your own money up after that. And I was right. But I wouldn't punish the children trying to get an education.
Well, first of all, do you understand where the Secretary of State is coming from? Do you have sympathy for the comments he's making?
Oh, I know where he's coming from, but
so
it's
where
it's
do we make those? Where? How? Where
well,
would
I
you?
I wouldn't mind paying a subscription towards my prescription charges. Something that means tested, of course. Things I get. People are earning big bucks. Hit them from the pocket, not the small people.
Sometimes the argument against means testing is the cost of actually doing the means testing can sometimes almost outweigh the benefits.
Well, I can work itself out in the long run.
I notice we've got a line in from the Department of Economy. They say, we regularly review how universities are funded. However, no one should be priced out of education. And I guess, Robert, that is something that you're talking about in terms of the two-tier education, that if you increase the prices for people, the people that can afford it, you know, they can still afford it.
Exactly.
And those that cannot, those that are on the lower end, are going to be priced out.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the point around pricing students out of education, that is already happening. That we're actually talking about further pricing people out. I mean, we look at the students that exist at the minute. Over three quarters of students worry about mental health. Financial troubles consistently ranks in the top two reasons for mental health issues among students. And 70% of students say that they worry about future levels of debt. We know that more and more students are relying on precarious working contracts in order just to make ends meet, relying on food banks towards the end of the month. I mean, this idea that students are all flush with cash just isn't the case anymore. I mean, this is one of the interesting things. A lot of the politicians talking about increasing fees benefited from a time where they not only didn't have to pay fees, but they got paid to go to university. That isn't the case anymore.
You know, if you have someone from here and they decide, right, two students from here and they want to follow a certain line, a certain career, an education to get there, and one goes over to England to do so, why should they have to pay more than someone that works here? I guess that is what it comes down to, Robert.
Our argument is that they shouldn't, and that's why we've been working with colleagues across the UK, and my colleagues in NUS have developed a campaign around a national education service, an education service that is accessible, that is funded, that is lifelong, that exists from cradle to grave.
So let's cut through it all. What you're saying is you don't want to see an increase here. You also want to see it reduced here and across the water in the rest of the UK.
Sorry, I wasn't as clear as I should have been. We want to get rid of fees altogether. Fees is not a sustainable.
Is that realistic?
It absolutely is realistic, because it's not, if government is truly prioritising the future of the economy. As I say, we talk about multi-year budget and we talk about future-proof in Northern Ireland, about investing in a knowledge economy, about increase in investment here. We have to be knocking down barriers to access and education so that anyone who wants to get an education is able to do that and upskill themselves. So whether it's in England, Wales or Northern Ireland, we need to go down the same route as Scotland, get rid of tuition fees, and we'll see in the long run that actually higher education institutions will require less funding from the public purse, because we'll be putting that money back into the economy. Education is key to growth in the economy. Getting our young people educated and ensuring all young people are able to get that education is absolutely critical if we want to see some of the big structural issues in the Northern Ireland economy challenged.
So, Robert, just before we finish up this morning with yourself, what's your message to Arlene Foster, the First Minister, if she happens to be listening?
Well, I first of all, I would be very happy to meet with the First Minister to talk about this issue, to talk about the position that we come from. But my message is clear. The debate has been had. This debate comes up every now and again. and it's been had. The answer to Northern Ireland's issues, to the funding issues, is not to face additional financial burdens on the students. Students are already struggling, and it can't be the answer to make them struggle even more.
Okay, Robert, thank you. 030 30 80 55 55. Again, the question to you this morning is, what changes would you make? You know, it's been made very clear from the Secretary of State that we've got to try and find a way to make ourselves more financially stable in Northern Ireland, and a way that doesn't simply involve us going to Westminster and saying, hello, Treasury, can we have more cash? So where would you cut? Where would you move money? What would you be happy to do to try and raise more money to ply into Northern Ireland? Let's speak to our commentators, Frank Shivers and Malachy O'Doherty. Good morning to you both.
Morning, Vinny. Morning, Frank.
Malachy, we'll start with you. I think that it's also important to remember, you know, to an extent, that university isn't always the way to go. It's not always right for everyone, and there are lots of other options there that are just as good, if not better, in some circumstances.
I think probably, actually, a lot of people are going to university that would be better off not going to university.
Is that still the case now? I know years ago when I went to uni, there were people, and I went across the water, but there were people that were there just because they wanted the experience, not necessarily the certificate at the end.
And there would be better ways of getting that kind of experience. I mean, I think if you look at the situation where, I mean, I just did a kind of full application for a student loan this morning just to see how much it is, and I ended up with an offer of £36,000 a year and over 3 years. So if I'm going to, you know, if I'm at the age of 18 or 20 and the government is prepared to lend me £100,000 for my self-improvement, then I'm going to be thinking to myself, am I really going to go to Queen's and study media studies, or am I going to, you know, cycle to Nepal? Or what, you know? I think that, you know, looked at that way, you know, the loan actually is this enormous opportunity for a young person, and it is one that could be used in a much more creative and productive way.
And what about from the First Minister, this suggestion, this is somewhere we should maybe look to have that discussion to see if we should make changes. Would you be in favour, Malachy?
Well, yeah, I don't want to see more expensive education, but I do want to see people, I do want to see equality across the whole sector, so that if this money is available to people to get a loan, then everybody should get it. But the other thing that I'm worried about is this idea. I mean, we've just had an argument about whether we are diluting or weakening the union by having a border down the Irish Sea. We're now talking about Northern Ireland being a whole different tax system from the rest of the UK, and somehow having a responsibility to be self-sufficient. When did this idea arise that Northern Ireland could be economically self-sufficient? It's a region of the UK, or in the future it's a region of Ireland,
well,
or whatever.
I understand the point you're making, but I haven't made that comment myself this morning. We're not saying self-sufficient, we're saying having a way that we can create more revenue to be more sustainable without just getting the begging bowl out and saying, can we have more cash?
It's not a begging bowl. There's a legitimate political argument to be made that people across the whole state, the state that we're in, the UK, should be paying higher taxes for better public services. And that is, you know, the kind of argument that Labour fumbled in the last election, and an argument that we must get back to at some stage later, because otherwise you're going to have a succession of Tory governments eroding public services, and on the myth, you know, that we can pay our way. There's no such thing as Northern Ireland PLC. That old language that we heard for years, you know, this nonsense that Northern Ireland in some way can raise the funding to sustain itself. If it could do that, it could be an independent entity, and it can't. It's an appendage of the UK, and it should be comfortable and secure within the UK economic
Frank Shivers
system.
Well, I think, Vinny, the hard reality is starting to come home. Our politicians have to make the hard decisions that some would argue should have been made years ago. I don't think we're ever going to get to the situation that we're going to be self-sufficient. That's not the outcome. But we have an obligation to do our best to fund ourselves as best we can in Northern Ireland. And I do think it is a begging bowl that our politicians continually go to Westminster with. They don't come up with ideas of how they can raise money in Northern Ireland for it to be sustainable.
Just to go back to that statement, it's a very short statement that we got from the Department of Economy. I went to the Department of Finance yesterday. He sent me to the Department of Economy. Again, they've sent that line, and it relates to the fees. I basically said, are there any current considerations on a possible change to tuition fees in Northern Ireland, how people pay for uni, how much they have to pay? And again, they said, we regularly review how universities are funded. However, no one should be priced out of education. And what's really interesting about that from the Department of Economy is that the Minister for the Economy is Diane Dodds, who is, of course, with the DUP. So some people might look at that, Malachy, and say, sounds a little
it's
bit at odds
of,
of what the First Minister, the yeah. leader of the DUP, yeah. is saying. What do you yeah. think?
Well, Arlene herself was fairly tentative in raising the idea, you know, and saying it's something we should discuss but not necessarily do. And priced out of education, nobody should be priced out of education. You know, that's you could still raise loans within that notion. I mean, the loan system in the rest of the UK, you know, the fee structure is higher than it is here. And there are, if you're going to defend the fee structure and the university system as currently operates, there is a damage done to the local educational economy by the low fee structure, in that Queen's is now canvassing far further abroad, you know, for high paying foreign students to come in. That's how they see their business model working. That's why, for instance, it's alleged, for instance, that the new red logo on Queen's University is red because the Chinese see red as a lucky colour, you know, and it's good for branding in the Chinese market. So that's what Queen's wants. Queen's, you know, I think it was Robert Murdoch referred to a cap on local students, and that cap is that Queen's wants to put a limit on the number of local students so they can get foreign money. And that's how it works for them. So it's not so simple as keep fees low and students in Northern Ireland are going to be okay and better off than elsewhere.
030 30 80 55 55. Sorry, Frank, you went back in there.
I wanted to ask Monica a question. You know, we pay about half of what the fees, in fact, over half of what the fees are in England, and obviously we're funded by the majority of English taxpayers at 11.2 billion a year. Is it fair that, you know, they have to pay over double the fees and we get half the fees and we're topped up by their taxes? I don't think it is. You know, is it fair that, you know, we don't pay water rates, they pay water rates, and they send the money over to top up our services? I don't think that is. It's not fair. It's not a fair system.
No, I suppose you're right. I mean, we are a region within it, and we should be consistent with the rest of it in terms of, you know, the viable or necessary expenditure within our region. But we have decided on devolution. We have decided that there will be flexibility of how we spend our money, and there will be decisions made of purely local relevance. And one of those made was to cap student fees. And yes, you're right. If we do that, then inevitably we're going to have to find that money from somewhere else. We're going to have to,
make
increases somewhere else to cover the cost.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Jim in West Belfast. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Vinny. How are you doing? I was making a point to your researcher. Here we are. This is Monday, the sixth working day into this new executive. And we'll have two major disagreements. We had Arlene, we had everyone put saying last week there would be water charges. Michelle and me came out straight away and said there would be no water charges. We've had Arlene saying that they're going to inquire about tuition fees, and we've had Sinn Féin come out and say, no, that has not happened.
I don't think Edwin Putt said that there should be. I think
he mooted the idea.
But again, there's a difference. He wasn't necessarily endorsing it, and there's a difference between let's have discussions on X, Y, and Z, should maybe make changes, and actually this is a 100% concrete where it should be. He thought the Secretary of State might have wanted us to do that, and I think the Secretary of State, when his comments.
I waited 15 minutes and I'm only on 30 seconds talking and you're cutting across me. I haven't made my point yet. I've phoned up.
But Jim, we can have a conversation.
I know, my point is, the executive here, these people, sixth day into this new assembly, they can't agree. There's two major disagreements. I doubt very much that they've got around the table and they've brainstormed and put ideas together. And that's what you need to do. Sit down and put your political religious differences aside and try and work out how can we make revenue, because I hate to agree with Malachy O'Doherty,
he's not that bad, Jim,
but I have to say that he is right. This is not sustainable. There's no infrastructure here to sustain us being self-sufficient. It's not realistic. It's not going to happen.
But Jim, there's not a difference, Jim, between being self-sufficient and raising more revenue within ourselves to be able to be more sufficient. There's difference there.
We have to raise revenue. This is the whole point. Northern Ireland can't be dependent on Yorkshire or Manchester or other parts of the UK to sustain us. You know, Frank Shivers, the other guy, made the point, you know, why should we pay less than somebody in England? You know, this is what I'm saying. Northern Ireland is a small, I think it's actually smaller than Yorkshire. It's a small
okay.
part
Jim,
of the
stay
UK.
There for a second. I want to play this clip for you. This is Michelle O'Neill, and she told Mark Carruthers that a rise in income tax for the most rich is still one of Sinn Féin's plans to actually raise that revenue.
So we have a big job of work to do in order to be able to deliver for public services, but we need to not just revert to the old arguments of let's go to water charges, let's go to tuition fees, let's look at being creative. One of the things...
I mean, the point is, you've just said yourself that there's very little wriggle room on the part of the executive. You don't have tax varying powers, for example, though some of your colleagues have argued for that mm-hmm. in the past and think you should be able to increase income tax on the best paid. Is that still an option?
Is that it is, and one of the things just to say, I mean, we'll get more detail of this as time goes on, but one of the things that Conor Murphy, our finance minister, is looking at is can he bring forward, or he will bring forward, a commission to look actually at our tax levers. Let's look at the powers that the executive currently have. Scotland have been successful in looking at what powers they have. This executive needs to do exactly the same.
So the answer is just tax the rich, is it?
No. Well, we should be progressive in our taxation. Of course we should.
But we are progressive in our taxation.
We should never be targeting those most in need. All our funding, as I said, if you've got a limited pot of funding, how you use that is crucially important. In my opinion, the best way to do that is actually to target need. Make sure we invest in those people that need our help more than others.
So, Jim, would you tax people that earn a lot of money more to try and raise that revenue?
Look, I'm not going to come on here and say to you, I'm not an economist, I'm not an accountant, I am a mere mortal. But would I tax people who are rich? I don't know how that structure actually works, but I think we need to do something here that, you know, just because somebody's rich doesn't mean that you should have their money taken off them. It means that they've actually worked very hard and they've had creative ideas that our assembly needs to have to try and make money here. So maybe, you see, this is the point I've always made to people. Your MLAs, your Sinn Féins, your DUPs, your Green Parties, your Land, these people are not accountants. These people are not economists. These people are just ordinary people like ourselves who have just got into politics and just touched lucky. You need to get a team around you of these super rich here in Northern Ireland who have made money, who have proven they can make money in their own right. Get them around the table, get them into the executive and let them put their brainstorm together, because this is not sustainable. We're going to have the same discussion in 6 months' time, a year's time, 18 months' time, and it's not sustainable.
Okay.
Meanwhile, people are going homeless, food banks are on the increase, people can't afford to heat their houses.
Okay.
Jim, thank you.
Frank, what do you reckon? You know, we complained when we wanted politicians back into power to run the country. We now surely can't complain when they do go back in and try and do just that, make those tough decisions that they're elected to do.
I just hope, Vinny, that they can follow through with those tough decisions, because they're a long time coming and they need to be made. You know, unfortunately, the reality is they're going to have to close schools, they're going to have to close hospitals to make bigger and better. And that's the cold reality. And if our politicians locally can't make those decisions, they need to get out of politics and move on. Because
look at the uproar already when Arlene Foster is simply suggesting, you know, we should talk about it, and people are outraged.
Well, that's what makes me laugh. You know, we should be looking at all aspects of how we can raise additional revenue or save money.
If we find ways of tax raising money, taxing foreign holidays, taxing social media, taxing 5G, whatever they might come up with, that money would just go, wouldn't it, into the exchequer, and then it would be the Treasury that would decide how it would be spent. Could we have some kind of system whereby if we are going to have exceptional taxation here, that we have control over how that money's spent, and it's spent inside Northern Ireland? Is that a feasible idea?
Malachy, we do have that in our rates, in our business rates go in locally. They don't go to Westminster. There's other local taxation that is raised and stays locally. But yes, I think you're right. I think if we identify, whether it be student fees or whether it be savings made throughout, I don't know, the civil service, that we should ring fence that money for Northern Ireland. That should be additional. If we make the effort and the struggle to get that money, it should be kept in Northern Ireland.
Okay, Brian and Derry. Good morning, Brian.
Yeah, good morning, Vinny. You're on about turn around and say, how can we actually turn around and save money and get money? Why not scrap the BBC TV licence altogether and make every household pay their £154 into the NHS, into the schools, into the tuition fees and things like that there? Mm-hmm. Why do we have to turn around and put £5 billion a year, which is going from the licence payers into the BBC? Why should we not turn around and a billion pound of that every year coming to Northern Ireland?
And you'd be happy to pay that 150 odd quid of an NHS, an extra NHS tax?
An NHS what?
Tax.
What do you mean tax? No.
Well, I'm just trying to give it some kind of name, but that extra money, that 150 quid, you're thinking every year you'd be happy to sacrifice the BBC and put that into the NHS. Yes,
and I'll tell you what the situation is. The BBC's through ruling, and they say they don't advertise. The BBC do advertise. They advertise in some of the programmes. Gwendy Really TV, Gwendy Home, Homes Under the Hammer. They actually break into that there and they advertise. They advertise TVs, so don't be telling me the BBC don't advertise.
But they're not commercial advertisement.
They are commercial advertising. You look at it, it's funny. You go on and watch Really TV. There's BBC programmes on that there.
What TV, sorry? Real TV?
Really, yes, and It's free on Freeview TV.
Right.
You go and you call it Really TV. Go into a programme called Home, which is Homes Under the Hammer, which you put on after the show now and be on BBC One. You go into Homes later on and you'll see that they break and they're halfway in through it and they advertise.
But is that not that channel advertising something that happens to be a BBC programme?
No, it doesn't matter what it is. BBC.
No, but it does matter when it comes down to who's paying for that. If they've paid for the rights to show a programme and they are advertising the fact that they're showing that programme, it doesn't mean the BBC or you, through your licence fee, are paying for that.
The BBC has got cuts on it. They've got shares on it.
Okay.
They sell it off and they get shares on it. Yes, they do. I have no idea.
I think the BBC do advertise in America. I'm not sure if you watch some of the BBC America programmes, they do.
Made a different country. I'm just turning in here. £5 billion a year. 750 million, which was coming from the Conservative Party, which they are scrapping this year. And that's why you are fighting with the 75-year-olds have to pay. They're the same. What I'm trying to say there, make everybody pay. Make every household pay £154 a year and scrap the BBC licence.
Okay.
That's £1 billion a year coming in to the economy of Northern Ireland. And if they're helping the economy of Northern Ireland, only scrap it if the money's going into the NHS or the schools. Give free tuition fees to the younger generation coming up, because if you don't, more and more people are not going to go to the schools. They can't afford it, and they can't afford to do things. Now, the situation is, I'm a big fighter of scrapping the BBC licence altogether.
What is it you don't like about the BBC, Brian?
What I don't like about it, too many repeats. I'm watching too many programmes. Programmes I want to watch, which is lost. BBC 4 doesn't come on to the evening. BBC 3, now you can't get. You have to go on the Sky to get it.
You go onto your iPlayer to get BBC 3.
Pardon?
You can get BBC 3 through your iPlayer.
Through your iPlayer?
Yes.
But what if I haven't got an iPlayer? What if I don't subscribe for the iPlayer?
You don't have to pay to subscribe to the iPlayer. Well, the iPlayer, I guess, you're meant to have a licence fee, but you just go on.
But why should I have to turn around and go out and buy myself a smart TV and to have the internet to pick this up? Why can't I not get it just through RD TV? There's lots of people out there who hasn't got the internet. A lot of older people out there who don't know nothing about the internet and they like to sit and watch the TV. But they can't get these programmes that you're saying unless you've got a smart TV.
Well, that's a fair point. You've got to have the internet. You can watch it on a phone or whatever, but you've got to have the internet.
So you have to buy the internet to get it.
Okay.
I'm saying scrap it, make it free, make these tour and advertise. £5 billion a year, get under the BBC, £1 million+, come to Northern Ireland every year from the people of Northern Ireland.
Okay.
I roll up my £154 a year, get under the BBC, get into the NHS and the schools.
All right, Brian, thank you. Brian, thank you very much. 030-30-80-55-55. Anyway, Robert and Carrickfergus next. Robert, sorry to keep you waiting. What do you think?
All right, Sonny. It was only a suggestion made by Arlene and a suggestion made by Edwin Poots about these things. But they said before they went into the executive again, they were going to have to make hard decisions and talk about things.
Yeah.
But here we have Michelle O'Neill just jumping straight over the two suggestions and saying no. Well, this is the same Michelle O'Neill who for the last few years has been telling the people we could have a United Ireland, and when asked how we would keep a United Ireland, we'd raise our own money and all. Well, they can't raise the money to keep this country. How are they meant to raise money to keep two countries going, you know what I mean?
What about you, Robert? Like, as just someone that lives in Northern Ireland, where would you be happy to pay a bit more or lose something to try and help them up at Stormont to create more money, to generate more cash?
Well, it's not up to me, you know what I mean?
It's not up to you to make that decision.
One of your callers said before they're not an economist. Neither am I. Yeah. We vote these people in to make these decisions.
But it's your money.
If they make the decisions, we have to go with them. I mean, it's the only way you're going to get the country to survive. That's the point. Yeah.
And I do get that point, but no matter what the decisions they make as our elected representatives, it's your cash, it's your income that might affect, or your services.
The suggestion, maybe it's not just Mang, it's the whole country.
Yeah.
I mean, for an example, Michelle said about taxing the rich. Well, yeah. I'm certainly not rich, I'll tell you that there. So if they're going to tax the rich, put more taxes onto them, does that mean that all the MLAs are going to be taxed? If so, if they're getting a higher tax, can it be backdated 3 years for the money that they're robbed off of people for not doing their job?
I don't know if they would agree with that particular phrase, but I think, you know, the Secretary of State, again, going back to what he was tweeting, I think, last week, that we had 3 years where politicians were getting paid at a cost of millions. So some will hear that and will find it difficult to, you know, understand why they then want to take money off them through whatever means that might be. Robert, thank you. Stephen in Chester, good morning, Stephen.
How are you, Vinny?
Go ahead.
Can I have a calendar, for starters?
Yes, you can. Stay on the line and give your address at the end. But what do you think of this in terms of tuition fees, income tax, the power to raise income tax? Because that's another issue that's not necessarily going to be an immediate thing, the change of our taxation powers in Northern Ireland. So in terms of now, 2020, what we can do right away, that probably isn't realistic.
Well, I actually went to university in England and a stud in England, so I'm actually one of the people that your contributors have been talking about that left the North and never came back. And my kids actually go to the education system in England. And I think the first thing would be looking at integrating the education system. I just think that there's huge waste there, that in terms of if you have a small village, you could have two schools in it for two communities whenever one school would suffice.
You would close schools?
No, I would integrate. So okay. Merge.
Merging usually means that somewhere has to shut, obviously, to reduce numbers.
No. Well, yeah, call it what you want, but I think there's so much benefits for our children being integrated and seeing what goes on with the other side of the community, and I think that'd be there'd be benefits across the board. I also don't think if you've got a small village, and I'm sure there are small villages that have got two schools when it warrants one, and there's definitely savings there to be had.
Yeah, well, Malachy O'Doherty, that's something we've discussed on this programme many times before,
yeah.
And also then into the likes of the closure of hospitals, if centres of excellence are being created.
Well, I think the Community Relations Council did research a few years ago on the actual cost of a divided society, the cost of maintaining sectarian division, and I can't remember what the figure was, but it was a big figure, and your caller is absolutely right, there is a saving to be made there. And, I mean, the division of society screws up the whole allocation of housing around the place, for instance, and perhaps leads to homeless in areas where there's protest against habitation of certain people there. And I mean, what it costs in terms of policing, and what it costs in terms of the distribution of healthcare. We know in terms of the hospital system that there's a plan for saving there under Bengoa, which has been there for years now. And we know that the smaller regional hospitals will have to go. And we know that there will have to be a consolidation of services in bigger areas, because that's what the Royal College of Surgeons insist on. That's where doctors who want jobs don't want to work in small hospitals. They want to work under a big consultant where they will get the experience and the work and the training that will allow them to progress in their own careers. And what a lot of them are doing, and we see this around, is they're going to Australia and taking jobs there. So, I mean, I think there is a fundamental structural reorganisation of the health service and of much else in the society which will save money. I think, when we started off talking initially about what we're doing for students and how you charge students, I think the big thing there is that you rethink as well just what it is that is good for a young person at that age. If you're going to invest that amount of money in them, is it really very often to send them to university within its business model to do degrees which are not particularly of value, other than because employers...
I do wonder if that still happens, and I don't know, I don't have any stats, but if that happens as often now, people go to uni just for the sake of going to uni. You know, years ago, you maybe got a grant, or it was a lot cheaper to go to university. You mentioned that loan quote you had this morning. Was it 36 grand?
36,000 a year.
That's a huge amount of money to to end uni have, you know, in terms of debt, on top of whatever else you've racked up on an overdraft or credit cards?
And the reason a lot of people go to university is because if you apply for a job at the end of it, then there will be a requirement on your application form. One of the essential requirements for a job will be a degree. You know, and I mean, the employer isn't saying, you know, that degree might be something that is of no particular value, hasn't really a strong relevance to the job in hand. 5 years after getting your job, it'll be your experience that'll count more than anything, and nobody will care what your degree is. I've been self-employed all my working life. No one has ever asked me, you know, if I had a degree in journalism or what I do. It's what you do and it's what the experience that you get that is of value.
People are sometimes surprised when I...
putting through people through these hoops.
People are sometimes surprised when I tell them I do have a degree in journalism, but I'm not sure what that says about me. Fred and Dermore next. Good morning, Fred. Hello, Fred.
Those comments about students yes. having degrees in... Some of the things they have degrees in, I don't think even what the degrees are about. But this is where the country has went wrong. That's why we have so many foreign nationalists come in to do the heavy work that people... It's skills people need, hand skills. We know that you couldn't get a plumber or an electrician or a joiner now because everybody has degrees. They don't want to work anymore. And the simple answer, you're talking about the minister, first minister, deputy first minister, all have said since they come in was no. One said yes, nor said no. And that's the way it's going to be. It's going to be no different. But they've two different outlooks in Northern Ireland.
Do you not have faith, Fred, that they will make the difficult decisions that politicians have to do?
No, that's why they're so slow on going back. They knew they were going to have to make decisions. I mean, we can't depend on the United Kingdom to keep us... We're not self-sufficient as yet and never likely will be.
Yeah.
And they're always sharing this old rascal, the British government. Take the British government's money out of it and see how well they get on.
Now, okay, Fred. Fred, thank you. Did you describe it as an old rascal? I've never heard it described like that. Right, Frank Shivers, last word on this to you. Again, you know, where are changes made? Tuition fees, rates, water charges, prescriptions, maybe road charges. Where does it start? Where does it end? What do you think will happen next?
I hope that our politicians have the political gravitas to make the hard decisions. But it's not only about raising taxes and money and whatnot. It's about creating savings as well. I think there's an awful lot of waste in Northern Ireland,
yeah,
right across the board from our education system. And I think the figure was 800 million was the final figure segregation and whatnot throughout our...
But do you think that school closures or hospital closures could actually be on the cards?
I think the reports from the Education Library Board are saying that, you know, to close, I think it was 7 schools that they said, look, these are the schools that need to close. As long as they're closing for the right reasons, to make a better education system for the people that are going there and create savings, then there's absolutely no issues with that. And that's, again, the hard decisions that need to be taken, Vinny.
OK, we'll leave it at that for now. Frank Shivers and Malachy O'Doherty, thank you very much.